And what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the King's Court Podcast, presented to you by RateCrushers.com. And as you guys can see, I'm not alone. Joining the show once again, I don't know how many times, James, I've had you on the so many times, but James Hamm of the King's Beat. James, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Hey, man, I'm pushing through. You know what I mean? We made it through another year of the pandemic. You know, I'm just about to get out of my 20s now, and it feels good. I'm feeling wiser at the age of 29.
All right. I guess I should be really wise then, because 29 was a long time ago.
29 was a long time. So James, here's a fun fact, and I think I did this to you the last time you were on the show, but that was back in, like, I think November was the last time I had you on. So this time, I went back on my YouTube channel. We're doing this live on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. So thank you guys all for who joining us live. But I went back. I did a little deep dive on my YouTube channel for cleanup. And there was one point where you joined this show after, like, it was probably right after, like, a DeMarcus Cousins piece. But it was, like, your very first time on the show. And, man, you didn't even have a camera set up yet. You didn't have a camera or nothing. You had to do the phone call interviews at the time. I think that's so funny, man. And now you're a big YouTuber now. Your podcast is YouTube. I mean, how we've grown.
Yeah, it's a journey, man. You know, I think when I first started, you know, like I would bring my camera every day out to the practice facility, and then I had like a little flip video camera.
Yeah.
And that's how I did like a bunch of videos and stuff while I was at the arena. Now it's like, you know, technology is so crazy that, you know, I did live television hits while sitting in my bar at my house. And I go on the radio, you know, three times a week on ESPN 1320, all from my house. So yeah, it's technology is definitely changing and everything's crazy. I mean, you gotta manage all of these different avenues to like put your stuff out there. It's crazy.
Yeah. So, and speaking of that, I mean, the last time you were on the show, you said that there was going to be an announcement coming, that the King's Beat was going to be announced, and it wasn't even the King's Beat yet. Like you said, something was coming down the pipeline. So how's the King's Beat, man? It's been a few months. How's it been going for you?
Yeah, I love it. You know, the autonomy to do your own thing is cool. I love being able to go on with the guys on D'Lo and Casey on ESPN 1320. And the King's Beat itself, we're growing every day. It's been a lot of fun. The podcast is just catching fire. It's blowing up on YouTube, and the audio itself, both of them are going huge, which is fun to watch. We just got done with another happy hour. Jerry Reynolds joined us, and happy hours are absolutely spectacular. They're so much fun, just hanging out, and it's virtual, of course, because of the pandemic and everything, but it's kind of like a comedy show for Kings fans, where, you know, we sit here and talk basketball for a couple hours, and all of it's going really well. It's not that much different. I just have more time to write more long form stuff, more thoughtful stuff, all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty cool. I dig it. I dig being my own boss again. It's fun. And I'm excited about where it's going.
James Hamm of the King's Beat joins us here on the King's Court, presented by RateCrushers.com. I want to thank everyone who is joining us live on YouTube, Twitter, and or on Facebook. Be sure to join the comment section below. Let us know if you guys have any questions that you guys want to be had while we do have James here on the show. All right, James, let's go ahead and jump right on into this team, because I have a few questions for you that I've been eagerly waiting to ask you, but let's start off with the first one. I think just get it out of the way. It's been talked about enough here on the show, and I told everyone that after the All-Star weekend, you can't bring this trade up anymore because this is the roster. But after the deadline, seeing Tyrese Haliburton getting traded, your initial thoughts?
My initial thought was I was surprised, because I know that the Kings really like Tyrese. But at the same time, this is a bad team, and you have to take risks. And Sabonis is a two-time All-Star at 25 years old, under contract for another 2 years. He's just an absolute beast in the paint, and I think he's the guy that can really unlock De'Aaron Fox. And so while I hated losing Haliburton, and I wish there was some other way to make that trade without Haliburton being involved – I understood it, and I think the Kings are better for it, like, initially. And you will have to really assess a trade in, like, 3 years, 4 years to see, you know, just where Halliburton goes as a player, and see if the Kings can build a team around Sabonis and retain him when he's a free agent in 2 years. But I think my initial thoughts are it was a risk worth taking. And, you know, again, I didn't love that Halliburton's involved, but, you know, I think you have to decide at some point what's more valuable, first round picks or young players like Halliburton. And I still think the Kings' first round pick is more valuable than Halliburton. And, you know, if I had a choice in that deal, I would have given up the first round pick over Halliburton. But I think on the open market, the Kings' first round pick still has huge value, and it leaves you with some assets to go out and do something this offseason, and add another huge piece to the puzzle.
Yeah, for me, it was I actually liked the trade right off the gate. I thought it was the Kings trading the upside, trading potential, and then finally putting arguably – it's not even arguable. This is the best player that De'Aaron Fox has played with since his time in Sacramento next to DeMontis Sabonis. And I just felt like you traded – the potential of Tyrese Halliburton, you put a two-time All-Star who's only 25 years old next to De'Aaron Fox, and I keep asking people this question, and it's, what other 25-year-old All-Star could you have gotten without giving up a single first-round pick? And I don't think you can name one that's out there. Can you?
No, I mean, that's at the end of the day, if Ben Simmons was off the table, which, you know, we now know that he was off the table, that he was going to Brooklyn. If he's off the table, this was the most logical trade, and you would have had to give up multiple first round picks to get Simmons. And I kind of prefer Sabonis. I think Sabonis works with other players better. I think, you know, he's got a hole or two in his game, just like Simmons does. But at the same time, you know, this notion that there was a bunch of teams out there with a two-time 25-year-old All-Star that would have made a trade with the Kings if they had known that Halliburton was available, to me, is just a joke. And the fact that the Kings were able to dump Buddy Hield's contract in the trade as well, that, again, is like a tremendous, tremendous play by Monty McNair. Just my opinion. I mean, it could work out to be really bad. It could be that, you know, Halliburton ends up being a multi-time All-Star and a Hall of Fame-type player, and that Sabonis leaves after 2 years and you got nothing. But at the same time, like, this team was just they're in such a dark place, and that's with Halliburton on the roster. And so, yeah, you know, how he played almost every game this season except for the short stint when he had COVID, and the results are what they are. This is a team that can't get out of its own way, and it's a team that can't win, and now you're going to try something different.
Exactly. So I'm trying to pull up the stats here while I can of the Halliburton since being traded and Fox being traded. Long story short, it just seems like for me, James, as well, that De'Aaron Fox was always been a point guard that had the ball left in his that always had the ball in his hands. Through his entire basketball career, he's always been known as a point guard, someone that would dictate the pace with the ball in his hands. And this year, the Kings saw the potential of what they had in Halliburton during his rookie season and put the ball in I don't want to say they put the ball in Halliburton's hands, but they put another guard that needed the ball in his hands to be effective, being Halliburton, and said, Fox, we need you to move to shooting guard. And I think that's where you kind of saw the regression in De'Aaron Fox. But even with that step back to start the season, up to this point, his numbers have gradually improved. Do you think now with Fox having the ball in his hands, it will make his game back to what we've seen as the potential All-Star he was last year? Do you think that the two just didn't mesh? Not necessarily as teammates, but just they didn't work on the floor because they needed the ball in their hands.
Well, I don't blame any of De'Aaron Fox's struggles on Halliburton, to be honest with you. Okay. In my opinion, Fox came into training camp and wasn't ready. He wasn't ready to compete at the highest level, and he really struggled. And I think at the end of the day, Fox has to take responsibility for that himself, and why that happened and how you avoid that next time. I think there's a lot of external things that were happening, or even internal things with the Kings, where you had guys who had, and Buddy Hield and Marvin Bagley, who had openly told the team and told media that they did not want to be here any longer, and they were still on the roster. I think that was an issue with Fox. I think just the whole vibe coming into this season, the way that Luke Walton was fired so early, and again, that was Fox's. Fox liked Walton. So I think what we get to is a point where like something big had to change, and it had to be dramatic. And again, I would have liked to have seen, in a perfect world, Fox and Halliburton get, you know, 2 years to really develop and to become who they can be as players. Halliburton needed to clearly step up and not sort of take a back seat to Fox when it came to shooting. Fox needed to figure out ways to push the pace better. But at the end of the day, when you pull Halliburton out and you put in Sabonis, this is just a totally different style of play. All we're seeing all of these crazy screen and rolls and, just the elements that Sabonis can bring to the court, the passing ability, the ability to clear space. Fox, not only has he not played with a player this good, he also hasn't played with a passing big man at all. So the Kings haven't had a passing big man since he's been here. I mean, Rashawn Holmes, like, he's never even sniffed 2 assists a game. And so that really does make things difficult. And what we see now is, like, you pull Sabonis off the court, and it goes right back to the ugly, like, you know, perimeter, you know, everyone just flipping the ball around, like, offense that we saw before Sabonis. And he just brings so many elements that the Kings, you know, that the Kings didn't have. I mean, you also see some of the other Kings bigs trying to make some of the passes that Sabonis makes now, and it just doesn't work. You know, guys are throwing the ball out of the bounds. Guys are missing passes. I mean, it's just he is a special passer, and he adds a new element to everything. And I think that that's where we're going to see the major improvements. So, again, I would say, like, Halliburton, Fox, it could have worked. Go back and look at CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, and it took McCollum until year 3 and year 4 to actually become a player at all playing alongside Lillard, and the Kings didn't give this enough time to really have that happen where you have this chemistry build. And those two, they had no problems with each other at all. I think this is just now, it is, the ball is back in Fox's hands more than it was before, but you know, it's in Sabonis' hands as well.
Yeah, and I think what also gets overlooked in that deal is the fact that the Kings added wing depth, the 3-and-D players in Justin Holiday, Jeremy Lamb, and then obviously the Marvin Bagley trade to get Dante DiVincenzo. The Kings finally got their guy in Dante DiVincenzo. Overall, as a roster, after the deadline, and I know you hate doing it, but what would you grade Monty McNair's trade deadline moves?
Well, I thought he was bold. Yes. I thought he did. I thought he did a lot of good things. Like you said, I don't like giving grades.
I know.
I think grades, like, when we look at specifically like this, we won't know what this trade ends up being for a couple of years. Like, if the Kings, well, I guess I could say this. Like, this trade sets up for another big trade this offseason. That's what this does. So where the Kings didn't really have they were sort of rudderless, like, where, how do you improve this team moving forward? And you can keep adding, like, quote unquote, better players, but if you don't have an identity of who you are and what you're trying to build around, it's really hard. You can't just keep saying, well, we want players that can run with Fox, because, you know, like most NBA players, I mean, they are professional athletes. They can run up and down the court. And so I think with Sabonis, it gives you a clear path forward where you know exactly the two players that you're building around, and then you have to add the pieces that make sense, which is shooting, it's long and athletic people, it's, you know, you're going to need a shot-blocking big, preferably at the power forward position, that can come in and, you know, change your defensive schemes and work with Sabonis. I really think that you have a puzzle, and you didn't have the edges of the puzzle, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got the edges done. Now you have to build out the rest of it. You got to start filling in the middle. But once you know the parameters of the puzzle, you're usually a lot better. And I think that that's where we're seeing the Kings at this point. And, you know, so if I'm going to grade McNair, I think he did really, really good work. It was hard. It was uncomfortable for some people. But at the same time, this team was going nowhere, absolutely nowhere this season and probably next season. And then you're going to lose Harrison Barnes. And then where do you go from there? And, like, you could see where this thing could get really dark really fast. And now you at least have some hope. And I think the other thing is the addition by subtraction. You no longer have Buddy Hield. You no longer have Marvin Bagley, who didn't want to be here. And it was clear, you know, specifically with Buddy, that Buddy just didn't really worry about what was happening on the court. He was just here, like, shooting his shots, getting his stats. And that's not a good culture to have.
Do you think that, because this gets talked about a lot in terms of, you know, the outside fan bases, like, for example, Detroit, there's a lot of people that are excited to have Marvin Bagley, but I don't think they know the whole backstory about his dad on social media and the talks that he did. And then for the Pacers, you see a lot of fans happy that they have a shooter in Buddy, but I don't think that they really know about him really wanting to get out. Do you think that inside there, that if we have a lot of fans watching, because we had James Boyd from the Indy Star on last, and we built up a few fans from Pacers that come and watch this show now, do you think that that wore on the Kings a little bit as a franchise or as a team, with those guys wanting to, I guess, publicly come out and say, we don't want to be here anymore? And then obviously with Bagley, his agent and you know, his team being so outspoken on social media.
Yeah, I mean, that totally wears on you. Like, yeah. By the end of it, like, they weren't, you know, they didn't want to be there. And their teammates, realistically, I think it hurt this team immeasurably the first 50-something games of the season. And it's not that they cause problems and stuff like that behind the scenes. But, like, when the going gets tough, you need a team to pull together. What you don't need is a team to pull together and have a couple of guys that don't really care.
Right.
And, you know, like, I think Indiana's got a taste of the good and the bad with Buddy Hield right away. I mean, he had a really good game in his opening game where he almost had a triple-double. The next game, he went 1-for-13 from three. The next game, he comes out, he scores like 36 or something.
8 3-pointers.
Like, yeah, you take the good, you take the bad. I mean, Buddy Hield just is all over the place. He's such an erratic player. And let's not fool ourselves. If you're an Indiana fan, like, Buddy Hield doesn't fit what you're doing. I mean, you have Malcolm Brogdon, you've got Chris Duarte, you know, you even have Lance Stevenson, and you have Tyrese Halliburton. Like, the game plan is different right now than it's going to be down the road. And I think what they're doing is they're helping themselves by improving Buddy Hield's trade value by starting him and giving him a bunch of opportunities to shoot the ball. But I can't imagine Rick Carlisle being at all enamored with Buddy Hield, because Carlisle is a X's and O's guy. He's one of the best coaches in the league. And when you really look at what Buddy does and mistakes he makes, and the fact that you cannot coach it out of him, that so many coaches have tried in the past, it does wear on you very quickly. And let's not forget that as well. Like, you talk about these two guys being there behind the scenes and, you know, whether it caused some sort of discord behind the scenes. Well, they weren't very good at basketball this year either.
Yeah.
You know, Marvin improved, but his numbers were basically cut in half. Buddy was not good at all for the Sacramento Kings this year. He was a negative on the court almost every single time. And it's the silly three-point shots, the horrible defensive rotations, the mistakes, the refusal to run a basic play, all of those things drove people bonkers. I mean,
yeah,
I swear Mo Harkless wanted to punch that guy at least 5 times this season. And I mean, you could see him yelling at Buddy Hield on the sidelines again and again and again.
Yeah.
It's the culture of my bad. And it's like, I don't want to hear it anymore. I don't want to hear my bad. Just do your job. You know, you're making everyone's life way more difficult than it has to be. You're costing us games. And then you're out here shooting 15, 16, 17 shots when you know, you haven't earned that. You haven't earned, like, the rest of us are doing our jobs and you're not doing yours. And even you are shooting 17 times a game and you're missing 14 shots. Like, that doesn't feel good. Like, you're costing us a chance to win. Mm-hmm. And I think people, like, they miss, like, when a guy misses 10 shots, you know, it's one thing if you're actually, like, Fox, you know, if he goes, 12 of 24 from the field, sure, he missed 12 shots, but he also made 12 shots, you know, with Buddy. It was a lot of 3-for-15 games, a lot of 2-for-17, and you're shooting 80-something shots or 90-something shots. He literally cost his team like 15% in field goal percentage for a game. So the difference between you shooting 55% and shooting 40% is one player missing one, like, just a bunch of random shots. That doesn't help you win games. And so, again, addition by subtraction, but I don't think it was just off the court. I think it was on the court as well.
Yeah. James Hamm of the Kings Beat joins us here on the Kings Court presented by RateCrushers.com. Hey, guys, if you guys believe that you're overpaying for your mortgage, motorcycle, or leisure insurance, go to RateCrushers.com and make sure that you're not overpaying for coverage. Again, that's RateCrushers.com. Go there. Make sure you're protected. Make sure you're insured, but you're not overpaying for your coverage. Let them know that the Kings Court sent you. This show is also brought to you by FanDuel.com. Everyone go to FanDuel.com. Use promo code KingsCourt, the name of this podcast, and they will match up to $500 of your very first deposit. Now, James, let's talk about the players that are here in Sacramento, okay? Because I've been watching this team very closely all season. And the one thing that has really stuck out to me, away from just the losses, but one thing that's really stuck out to me has been the play of Rashawn Holmes. And I think the reason why is there was a lot of expectation for him this season to continue what we saw the prior year, and then him getting paid and then being able to see what he can do with this team. Obviously, he's been going through it a little bit. We know about the loss of his cousin. He got that scratch in his eye that kept him out a few games. He comes back. He gets COVID. I really don't believe he's built that rhythm with the team. Then they go out, the Kings, and trade for Domantas Sabonis, and he went from being a starter now to an off-the-bench player. What has been the things you're hearing about Rashawn Holmes? How has his energy been coming from a starter to a bench, and do you think he's going to flourish in this role?
Do I think he's going to flourish? I think the answer to that is no. I think we've got 22 games of Rashawn Holmes left in Sacramento. I like Rashawn Holmes. He's a very good guy. He means well. I love his family. But everything stacked up against him this season for it not to be good. I don't think he came in a perfect headspace. I think he was a bit, I don't want to say angry, but
frustrated.
Like, he was slightly frustrated with his contract, mm-hmm. Coming in. And, I think that's why we saw him already. He fired his agent after free agency. And you know, we saw that with Buddy Hield when he signed his contract, and like, once you sign a deal, you sign the deal. So he didn't have to take a 4-year deal. He could have taken a 2-year deal or a 3-year deal with, you know, options and stuff. I think he did sign a 3-year deal with the fourth year as an option, a player option. But look, he got a huge pay increase. You know, he went from $5 million a year up to, you know, a 4-year, $47 million contract. But then just the season, the way it started, I think he was solid early on. I don't know if he was spectacular, but he was solid. And I'll point this out. The Kings early in the season, they weren't playing Marvin Bagley. They weren't playing a lot of – he didn't have a true big man next to him, which I know it seems weird, but, you know, when you're going up for a rebound and there's only one person, there's only you going up for a rebound, it makes it really hard. So if you watch what Sabonis does – he goes in the key and he clears out like three guys. Three guys are trying to keep him off the glass, which allows for other players to just walk in and grab rebounds. And that's why we've seen Fox and Barnes have big rebounding nights already playing alongside Sabonis. Dante DiVincenzo's had a big rebounding night. You know, there's just a different feel when you have a big guy in there who's clearing space for you. And Rashawn Holmes really hasn't had that. He hasn't had that second guy to help, you know, screen out some of these guys and hold people out of the paint. And then, you know, when you not only when you look at the trades that happened, and it's not just that Sabonis is there and he's going to have to take a major league backseat, because I think there's even a potential for them to play, you know, perhaps 5 minutes a half together. So
I was just about to ask you about this. Yep.
Yeah, I think there is, because I mean, we saw it with Miles Turner that it worked, except for Miles Turner can hit a three, and that is a substantial difference. It really does change your ability to space the floor. Like, if you were going to do that lineup, it would have to be with three other floor spacers. So you'd have to have, you know, DiVincenzo actually hitting shots, Davion Mitchell, you know, guys that can space the floor, even a guy like Justin Holiday, you know, so open the floor up. And I think maybe it can work, but at the same time, it's just really tough to play two centers, especially when one of them is a two-time All-Star and is going to play 35, 36 minutes a game. That leaves 10 or 12 minutes for Rashawn Holmes. And the other problem that Rashawn Holmes has is he's a true lob threat. He's the guy who's really, really good in the pick and roll. Well, the Kings don't really have a pick and roll lob passer anymore. And that's because they traded away Tyrese Halliburton. The relationship that those two had on the court was spectacular. And you took that from him. And so I think, look, I hope that Rashawn Holmes does bounce back and have a really solid final 22 games. I think it's interesting. He's number 22. There's 22 games left after the break. Mm-hmm. But he has to bring it. He can't get frustrated. He can't get in his head, because that's what I've seen. Because he's not just like not getting opportunities on the offensive side of the ball. He's in horrible position on defense. He's not rebounding well at all. Like, I know people are like, well, he's only getting 10 minutes. It's like, but the 10 minutes he's out there are really hard to watch. And the 10 minutes he's out there, he's not the same player he was for the last 2.5 years in Sacramento.
Right.
He's not bringing the same energy. He's not, like, he's getting boxed out way too easy. He's on the wrong side defensively all the time. I just think that there are too many things you can point to that just haven't been good. And he has not been the same player this year at all that we saw last year and the year before. And I hope he finds himself, but I also, like, I hope he finds a situation that's right for him, because, like, I think that's where we're going instead. Mm-hmm. And that's not a knock on a player. He should be wanted around the league. His ability to play the perimeter is really good. You know, it really does help teams. I think he'd look great on high-end playoff teams, whether it's coming off the bench or as a starter. I think a team like Golden State could totally use him. I think a team like Utah with Rudy Gobert, we get to the playoffs and Rudy Gobert just gets torched because every team in the league knows he won't leave the paint. That's not Rashawn Holmes. Rashawn Holmes can defend the paint. So between that, Chicago, Charlotte, you know, Toronto, I think there are going to be teams that come calling for Rashawn Holmes this summer. And yeah. I think he's going to be a really nice trade piece for the Kings. I do.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just over the last month since the trade and everything, he's averaging 7.9 points and 5.3 rebounds, significantly down from what he was averaging last season. And I agree with you. You can kind of tell the frustration is there. Just like I said, the in and outs out of the lineup due to injury and other situations off the court, as well as the frustration, like you said, of that contract. I think there was a lot of there was a big thought that he was going to go to Charlotte this offseason. I think there was a deal in place. We even talked about it on the show when you came on. And for that not to happen, I think that kind of threw him off for a loop. But, yeah, I had James Boyd on, and like I said, on the last episode of this show, and I asked him directly, I was like, do you think the Kings should experiment with a home Sabonis lineup? Like, do you think that should be something that they work with? And he outright said no, it wouldn't work. Miles Turner was a shooter more than Rashawn Holmes was, and there was still too much clogging the lane. He thinks that Sabonis in this game let him be the five out there and surround him and Fox with shooters, and that would probably be the best bet. I mean, obviously, I think that makes the most sense in today's NBA, but I'm still one of those that thinks that they can play together. I think you should try, like you said, 5 minutes a game, you know, or 5 minutes a half, and just see if that can work, just because Sabonis does have the ability to shoot. Rashawn Holmes is a rim protector. He's also great help side as a help side defender. And in the pick and roll, he has quick feet and he can stay almost in front of everybody. I think it's worth trying. But that again, that's probably just – I'm one of the very few, because a lot of people also see it as the Kings should go get a shooter like a PJ Washington or a Jeremy Grant. So there's that.
Yeah, I'd even say, like, since the trade, the stats you brought up were, like, that's him over the last, like, month.
Yeah.
But really, since the trade, he's averaging 3 points and two rebounds and 15 and a half minutes a night. And he's shooting, like, 38.9% from the field. Like, everything looks off. And, like, I want to say, hey, let's get this guy 20-something minutes and get his rhythm back. But, like, you don't have any more games to lose. Like, the Kings don't have any more waster games. And I don't know that they've got a shot to make the 10 seed either way, but they certainly can't wait. You have to come in, and in your 10 minutes, you have to be impactful. And that doesn't mean you got to score a bunch. It means that you got to do some dirty work, get some rebounds, but you also have to look like you need more minutes. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's what we're seeing right now, which it's a shame, because he's a good dude and he's a very, very solid NBA player. And this is just circumstances. These things happen on occasion. I actually think that the Kings probably shopped him hard leading up to the deadline, especially once they got Sabonis, and they just found that they would probably have better deals this summer with him to pull off. And, you know, that happens sometimes.
So I know a few beat writers, obviously, with you being on the show, and I talked to someone during the trade deadline, and he said that the Kings were looking at Charlotte, but then they made that deal for Montrezl Harrell. So again, it was just something else that came out of the way. Did you hear something of the same thing?
Well, no. I mean, I think everyone knows that Charlotte was a natural fit because they had PJ Washington and, you know, other potential players there that would make sense.
Yeah.
But they held on to PJ, right?
Yeah, like, they held on to PJ. Yeah. I think that's going to be an off-season trade piece.
Yeah, and Montrezl Harrell is he's an expiring contract. So so basically you're taking a low risk swing with Montrez. And I think that that's not a bad move, you know, for Charlotte. But I also think that Rashawn Holmes potentially would have been a great fit there. Especially with, they have so many ball handlers, so much versatility in passing and stuff like that. Which that's not something that Rashawn does. But I still think he fits in that system because they have so many people who can, you know, get him a ball. And, you know, even LaMelo, I think, would be really good. He'd be really good with LaMelo.
Oh, yeah, that lob threat. Because I'll be honest, I watch too much Charlotte. I feel like they're always on the TV. And that's not a bad thing. They're a very entertaining team to watch. They're a playoff team right now. But, yeah, I feel like the Mason Plumlee choice probably wasn't the best one. Just, I don't think Mason Plumlee fits there very well. I think Mason Plumlee would be good off the bench for them. I think Holmes would have been the starter there, in my opinion, looking at that team. But now, let's look forward to the Kings. 22 games left in the season here, James. I like what the team has done. I like that they've built a lot of 3-and-Ds. I think that Dante DiVincenzo definitely needs to find his legs, become that shooter. But my question to you is this, and it's just as about the team as a whole. Do you think that they are ready to, A, make this push for the play-in, and B, even be in the play-in? Do you think that they're ready for this?
I don't know. I mean, you have, you know, three really solid pieces in Fox, Sabonis, and Harrison Barnes. And so to me, like, why not go for it? You know, some of your tertiary players now, the guys who are going to play, you know, 18 to 20 minutes a night, even a little bit more than that, they're veterans, you know, DiVincenzo and Justin Holiday, you know, so I think you've got some pieces here that make sense. Mm-hmm. I would like to see them, like, try to win games. You got to build a culture. You got to make a reason why people want to come to Sacramento this coming summer. And I think the biggest way to do that is to really like push. I think a lot of people are like, ah, let's get that draft pick. Let's get that draft pick. I mean, just keep in mind that there's a good chance that the Kings, like, they're going to shop. They're going to shop that draft pick. They want to get better now. They get it. They understand that the path forward is to build a team for next season, that Sabonis wants to stick around, you know, because that's what you're facing. You got 2 years to make him happy, but realistically, you have 1 year, because after next summer, he's eligible for a massive extension, and that's when you're hopefully going to lock him up. Because if not, you're going to walk into next season going, not this coming season, the one after that, thinking, okay, do we have to trade him? Do we have to trade him before the deadline, or is he going to stay? And so the way you get around that is by putting a team together right now around him that makes sense for him, makes sense for Fox. So, yeah, I mean, the final 22 games for me, it's about building chemistry. It's about using players, you know, like Holiday, in roles that you can look and see, like use them as player archetypes and say, okay, what does this look like if I have this type of player, but a much better version of this type of player? Can I get Trey Lyles on the court and see what Trey Lyles looks like as a stretch four? Can I get a couple of three guard sets going so I can truly use Harrison Barnes at the four and see if he's my stretch four, my four going forward? And then, you know, it allows you to attack the small forward position versus power forward. Like, I think that there are a lot of questions that they need to answer right now. And I think 22 games with something to play for, that's a good thing. You know, they don't really have a great shot. They're four games back in the loss column with 22 games. That's not really that good. You have to play really, really well to get there. But, you know, like playing for something always has value, in my opinion. And the difference between being, let's say, the 7 spot in the draft versus the 9th spot, I don't think it's that big of a difference this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the percentages aren't that much different. Moving up, moving down a couple of spots. So, you know, the higher your draft pick, the more value it will have, for sure. But, you know, I think this team needs to try to gel and needs to see, you know, I want to see Harrison Barnes and Sabonis and Fox on the court for, you know, 36 plus minutes a game. Let's let these guys really grow into who they're going to be. Let's let them find their chemistry and their flow together. And see what happens.
If I gave you an over under of 12 and a half wins, would you go over or under?
Oh, I haven't looked at the schedule. I would probably take the under.
Wow, okay.
I mean 12 and a half out of 20.
22.
22. I mean, you're talking about, you know, going 13-5 if you're taking the 13-9 if you're taking the over. Mm-hmm. Like, the Kings haven't won 13 out of 22 games in a long time, you know, so that's tough. I mean, is it possible? Sure it is. But again, like, going through and looking at the schedule and like picking out wins that you think will happen and wins that you don't, you know, that you're pretty sure aren't going to happen. I would want to know more. I'd want to know more about what's happening and like what the full like schedule is and everything else. Yeah.
I've been thinking this heading into the All-Star weekend, but I listened to your show, the Kings Beat podcast, which, by the way, great show. If you guys haven't already subscribed to that thing, what are you guys doing? Take the time. Kings Beat on YouTube, iTunes, all that thing. Go hit subscribe. The merch is fire. Shout out to Jim from Brick House, who used to be a big sponsor of this show, helped with my logo as well, the t-shirts, everything. Shout out to Jim, man. Hopefully we're going golfing tomorrow. But you said on your show that during this All-Star weekend, there actually won't be that much practice time, and I've been thinking that they're going to at least have 2 to 3 days to practice before going in. So how much practice time do you think that they'll actually have before they go up against the Denver Nuggets in a home-and-home to come out of the break?
They're only allowed to have a true scheduled practice on Tuesday and Wednesday. That's it. That's all they're allowed. So they had Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. where those are free days. Even Monday is a travel day for some of these guys who are going home or whatever. But I'm not even sure if Tuesday can be a mandatory practice. I think it might be, but like they're going to get 1 or 2 days of full practice in. And I mean, that's enough to get some flow and to work on some stuff. I think more than, you know, most teams in the league, maybe any team in the league, 2 days of practice could mean more for the Kings than anyone else, because they have, it's not just Sabonis, you know, they brought in 6 new players total, and that's really, really tough. I mean, I guess you can say they brought in 6 players, but probably 2 of those guys, maybe even 3, won't play at all. You know, we've already seen that really the focus of this group is Sabonis and DiVincenzo and Holiday. You know, this gives them a little bit of time to kind of understand some other, you know, work on some things. I really like the pick and roll from the left side that we're seeing with Fox and Sabonis. I think Fox has been the beneficiary of Sabonis more than any other player, but it wasn't until this last game that I thought Sabonis started to become a beneficiary of Fox. And so we need to see more of that. Fox needs to make Sabonis better and not just Sabonis making Fox better. I also think like Harrison Barnes with that group has just been tremendous, and I want to see more, more, more. He needs to space the floor for this group. And you know what? The other thing I'm hoping is that DiVincenzo and Holiday, they start being a lot more consistent with their 3-point shooting. I think that they've really, like, their inconsistency early on here has hurt the Kings' chances to win, both in Brooklyn and in Chicago. Finally, we saw Holiday hit some threes, but both of those guys are taking, they're not great shots. Like, there are, like, DiVincenzo has taken some, in my opinion, some really, really rough, questionable shots.
Yeah.
And even that, like, Holiday does a lot of his shooting off the high pick and roll. Like, he's coming off the high screen and firing at the top of the key off balance. I didn't know that that's who he was as a player. Again, if you watch Indiana basketball, like, you're not going to sit there and study Justin Holiday. I mean, he was like the 5th or 6th person, maybe even deeper, that you would have studied. Like, I want to see what Lance Stevenson's doing, but I want to see Sabonis. I want to see Miles. I want to see Brogdon. I want to, you know, you start listing all their players when they're healthy, and like Justin Holiday is not someone you're like, oh, I've done a deep dive into Justin Holiday and watched him like a ton. Like, no, the way he gets his shots is different. He's long, he's athletic. I don't think he's as good defensively as I hoped he would be. You know, is like, I think he's solid defensively, but yeah, I kind of want to see. I want to see what happens at the shooting guard spot. I want to see if DiVincenzo can play alongside Fox, and if that can be your starting backcourt. Or if it's always going to be a player like Holiday, and you're just going to look for a better version of him during this offseason. So I think there are other trades that the Kings could have looked at here that would have made a lot of sense if you wanted to get good fast.
Hey, I saw the Boston Celtics trade for Josh Richardson in a first. I would have totally considered doing a Justin Holiday in a first for Derek White. I'm just throwing that out there. That's just the trade I would have thought of. That I think Derek White next to De'Aaron Fox would have made a lot of sense.
I would have looked at the trade that Portland did with the Clippers. Like, could you
Norman Powell?
Norman Powell? Could you got Norman Powell and Robert Covington? Is there a way that you could have worked a deal where all of a sudden you're a legitimate player?
I mean,
you're looking at, you know, Jeremy Lamb making what he's making. Like, if you could have involved a third team in that bigger trade, I think there's potential that the Kings could have done something, and Norman Powell would have been like a day one starter at the shooting guard spot, you know. But again, I don't think it. All these pieces are moving so quickly together and apart, and I mean, it's really not that easy to like trash a team for what they're doing.
How serious do you think Davion Mitchell's injury should be? Should we be expecting him to be right back into the lineup after the All-Star break?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've checked in and, you know, haven't got much on that. We didn't get much on that. We didn't get much on why they waived Luke King, you know, what they're going to do with that roster spot. I think that there's a lot of things that are open here at this point. And even like Jeremy Lamb, you know, Jeremy Lamb in his first game, he played like 34 minutes for the Kings. I mean, he put up 14 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists in that first game. He could be a guy that really is intriguing down the stretch. And, you know, so why I throw him in is because the Davion thing is, like, we're not hearing it's anything major. Like, he's not walking around with a cast on. But he was damaged enough that he couldn't play in the Rising Stars. And I know that that guy's a warrior. But, you know, you would have liked to, like, a little bit more information. And it's just not there.
So can I tell you, like, something that I also caught my eye about the injury and him not playing on it, playing in the Rising Star game, which we all knew he wanted to be in that game. Like, he wanted to make it competitive. Yeah. I noticed that when he took his pictures, his hands were in his pocket. And I'm just saying that's something I noticed about his pictures. And I could be me reading into it a lot, but that is something that I did notice. And so James, we're coming here to the end of the show. I want to thank you once again for joining. If you guys haven't done so already, at James_Ham_NBA on all social media platforms, the Kings Beat Podcast. You guys subscribe to there. This is going to be my last question for you, James, and that is this. If the Kings make the play-in, or the Kings have a successful push through these final 22 games, do you believe they will consider bringing back Alvin Gentry as the head coach? And I know this is a horrible question to end the show on because it's like an intense question, but I'm going to talk to you about it more probably at the end of the year.
Yeah, you know, like, look, if there are specific things that Alvin needs to do contractually to get next year for sure. And I don't think we know exactly what all of those are, but clearly the plan was a target of this team. And if he does get the team to the play-in, I think it really depends, Vince. What do they look like going down the stretch? Do they look like a team that's on the rise, or do they look like a team that's going through the motions and finishing up the year? And I'll say this. I think that there are guys there that like Alvin. Everyone likes Alvin. Whether they like Alvin's coaching style will probably be a discussion for this summer. And I think that there are plenty of guys on this roster that will – at least, you know, at least a handful of guys will have some sort of input in what they thought in their exit interviews. And whether or not he'll be back next year, I don't know. I would say, like, I wouldn't bet on it. And I think that the way that the trade deadline went, that Monty McNair made some major changes, that tends to make me believe that he's going to get a couple of years here. And that probably means he gets to hire his own coach. And whether that's Alvin or someone else, I think that Monty has earned that right at this point.
James Ham of the Kings Beat joins us on the Kings Court. Thank you so much, James, for joining us here on the show. But before I let you go, let the fans out there know where they can find you online. Obviously, the Twitter handle's there, and what more they can be expecting from you heading into the final stretch of this year and obviously for the years to come.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Kings Beat. Go to thekingsbeat.com. You know, you can follow me on Twitter. I use Twitter as a way to be, that's how I use it as a beat writer. I track the team that way online, and then I write long form and then the podcast is fun. And Brendan Nunes is working with me right now. He's filling in for Sean Cunningham, but Sean should be back soon. And you know, you can find me all over the place, but just look at the Kings Beat.
Shout out to Brendan Nunes, man. He came on this show early in the year, and him and I discussed the idea of if the Kings should even think about trading Fox for Simmons back then. But the reason why I bring this up is because he came on the podcast. We're supposed to be playing one-on-one, James. He's supposed to play me in basketball, and he hasn't shown up yet. Tell him I'm looking for him.
All right.
All right, guys. You guys go follow him, James_HamNBA, on all social media platforms, thekingsbeat.com, the Kings Beat Podcast. Become a premium subscription, right? That's how you get to those happy hours and things like that.
Happy hours.
Yeah. How much is a subscription to be a part of this, the premium subscription base, James?
Yeah, it's either $7 for a month or it's $75 for a year. I mean, it's half the price of going to the movies, and the happy hours themselves, like, it was almost 3 hours of Jerry Reynolds on the happy hour, like, just incredible stories. So yeah.
Did he curse for you? Because I saw your show that you wanted him to curse. Did he give you any good curse words or what?
Oh yeah. He said a few words here and there. Like he made everyone laugh multiple times. He told some incredible stories about him and Larry Bird on a garbage truck. Yeah, just all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Again, guys, go check out the King's Beat. Shout out to James Hamm, everyone. Thank you guys so much for following. I've been your host. My name is Vince Miracle. You guys can follow me on all social media platforms of @VMCenter. Shout out to our sponsor, RateCrushers.com, as well as FanDuel.com. You guys use those promo code TheKingsCourt, and they'll match up to $500 of that very first deposit. Again, James, thank you so much. Kings fans who joined us live, thank you guys all so much. And until next time, peace.